Right, if you just want to tell me how far we've come and where we are now.
Yeah, you start on a platform with a hazel bender over the top of it, covered in plastic and blankets. And hay on the floor for insulation. And you're about 50, 60 feet up. Nice view of the car park and the new camp.
Can you give me an idea of the dimensions of this and what it's made of?
Well, it's about, what, the whole platform itself is about 8 foot by, I think it's about 7 feet. And it's made of old beams that people have donated, old floorboards people have given us, or what we found in skips. And then the dome over the top is made out of coppiced hazel, which was donated by the Coppicing Society. And there's blankets over the top of that for insulation and plastic for waterproofing.
Ranting day. For anyone with a rant, just find an auspicious high place and begin. You'll be tolerated. Don't worry about it.
Right, the way I see it, right, we all live on one planet, right?
Hang on.
Okay.
Shout.
Okay. We all live in one planet, and it's like, if you liken it to like our spaceship, and we live in this spaceship, right? It's like the equivalent to the oxygen tanks would be the trees, yeah? Now, it's like the guy who's driving this spaceship doesn't understand that, and he's saying, oh, let's throw away an oxygen tank, you know, and we'll put a coffee machine or something there. And I go, no, hang on, lads, you know what I mean? We need the oxygen tanks to breathe, you know what I mean? And things like this, and they're doing away with all different things that are important for the whole ship to work. It's a whole system. Our system has to work with the natural system, and that's the way it goes. It can't be any other way. If not, it's like, that's the way the whole thing works, the whole shebang, you know what I mean? The solar system is our system, and we have to take into account that the system out there, the roads and the buildings, are only a part of a system that lives within a bigger system. And we have to live with the system that we live in and look after it and care for it. It's our system. The natural system is our system. And we have to live with it and work with it.
Can't we just get another planet when this one's run out? Huh? Can't we just get another planet where we got this one
No,
from?
We can't. We don't have a spaceship. We've got a little shuttle that sits about two or three spacemen.
But what about the poor cars? What are they going to do?
Cruelty to cars, is that what you're saying now?
Rust in peace.
Cruelty to cars, all right.
Rust in peace.
We'll see them going round with banners saying that in 10 years' time, hopefully. All right, thanks a lot.
Yay!
Thank you.
Can I have a quick rant?
Yeah, we go. Do you hold the camera?
No, no. Did anyone notice the sign along the road saying, like, slow down or something like that? Or, like, it was in three different languages, none of them Irish.
Really?
German, French and English. I mean, what's that all about? I mean, here we're...
The Irish don't need to be told, maybe. Maybe if they're true Irish, they know that driving at a fierce pace for the Glen of the Downs will only wreak havoc on an olive glass. And that's what we need to hang on to. The Green Ireland.
Woo!
Yay!
Yeah, but that's what they do know, that. It's up to us to tell them all, the ones that don't.
Come on, Captain, up there now. Come on, just come all the way
from
Galway.
Yeah, go away.
Come on. Come on, get up there.
I bear with me a wee sheet.
It's gorgeous as well.
It's sort of like out of the roots of the trees, all life can come. It climbs up that way, that way, down. That's down. That's down.
Yeah.
And that's up.
Sure.
And I think one of the things that we forget, a lot of people get into environmentalism and they go on about the rainforests in South America and sort of the desertification of Africa. And we've got to look at our own desertification. You know, like we're running out of bogs, we're running out of trees, we're planting sitka spruce and ruining our rivers. And we've got to hang on to the diversity that we have. And this place is a place of great biodiversity and a place that can give us all a place of solace and peace and comfort to go to rest our weary bones from Dublin's madness. And it needs to be saved, and it needs to be saved not for just us and not just for our children, but for our children's children's children. We can't just forget about the future. We've got to remember that we are indebted to the people of the past, and we have a debt to the people of the future to save this place, to keep this place for future time.
I've met a lot of people through this campaign of all different walks of life. I've met housewives who will come along with three or four loaves of bread, drop them down to the camp, and I've met the hardcore tree dweller, you know, who is living in thermal gear and clothes that they probably haven't washed in 2 or 3 weeks. And for me, I don't really care, really, whether, you know, they can afford only a couple of hours a week in being able to bake some bread, as I said, or somebody who can actually commit themselves to living down here. I don't look at them, you know, whether they've got long hair or dreadlocks or whether they're dirty or clean or whether they've got a foreign accent or an Irish accent. I mean, what I'm here is to meet people on a common bond and try and find a common link, which is our environment in the Glen of the Downs and whatever people it takes. I mean, we've got people in Dublin who are, you know, suits and working in courts, and they're doing their bit. The media always marginalises, always has to try and find some way of being able to define who's involved in what, and they never have the time, unfortunately, to come down and actually partake and involve themselves in meeting people and seeing what they're actually about at a more, you know, human level. I mean, if you just come down with a camera and you point it at a bunch of crusties with dogs on strings, it's very easy to make an opinion. But I think that really the media is selling themselves short at that level as well, because they're not really making any efforts to find out. They're here purely for the sensationalist tabloid opinion of a story. We recognise that fact. I mean, I'm not at all embarrassed to say that there's crusties down here with dogs on strings, but I mean, there's also much, much deeper than that. I'm not a crusty. I've got, you know, I don't even have a dog. But, you know, there's all sorts of different people. And I've seen it change people. I mean, there's people living down here who now were once, you know, systems analysts in large computer companies. You know, there's people down here who were once upon a time accountants in a previous life in Australian accounting firms, you know. There's remarkable people here who have had their own particular awakening. And I think that, you know, there is that whole area that has to be explored and I think seen as something positive as opposed to being something negative. If somebody wants to apply themselves to a sense of sustainable lifestyle and sustainable future. And if that involves packing in your job and making a stand for, you know, one of the last residual Irish oak forests in the 1990s, well, then that's what has to be done now. Unfortunately, so many people are locked into a life that that means they can't express themselves as themselves. Their boss tells them they have to be somewhere at 9 o'clock in the morning, tells them they can leave at 5, and then, you know, they've just got no time left after that. By the time they feed themselves, you know, wash themselves, put the kids to bed or whatever else needs to be done, there's not a whole lot of time to actually look at themselves and explore their own life and to awaken up to the fact that it's much bigger and much broader than that. Life is full of mystery and life is full of wonder, and there's places all around that you can find it, and the Glen of the Downs is just one of them, you know.
This lifestyle is like a style of life. I'm not often accused of having any style whatsoever. So, I grew up in a new town in Scotland. Originally from Northern Ireland, from Derry, but I did most of my schooling in Livingston, Newtown in Scotland. Went to college, studied applied physics with electronics, graduated, went to work for a defence company down in Essex. That was a really bad move. It's the most boring job I've ever had in my life. And it took me several years to actually escape from that environment, the work environment, and managed to escape. I learned how to build furniture out of wood from skips, which I thought was a much better way to spend my time than basically playing with computers for people who don't know very much about the environment or anything else at all.
What kind of defence work were you involved in?
I was working for GEC Avionics, and initially I was working in the Future Systems Laboratory. I mean, this is Interior bound still by the Official Secrets Act, but most of the work I was involved in was like basically computer systems analysis and mainframe installation and installing software on mainframe computers there. So I suppose I was a systems analyst or systems programmer, which is a really boring job. It's like there wasn't any daylight getting in, and I spent all my holidays basically working with the British Trust for Conservation Volunteers, doing environmental projects throughout Britain. Also, like, I ended up doing dry stone walling in Northern Ireland, and for me that was a way of learning new skills and basically learning better ways to live with our natural environment.
Thank you. great age. Ancient wisdom, wisdom from the past that's being brought into here and now. The wisdom of times past, the wisdom of the people that worked with the trees from time immemorial, bringing that wisdom and knowledge into today's world, because we need it today. We need lots more knowledge and it needs spreading. That's what these trees are saying. My name is Adj. I'm a druid. I'm a Cornishman. I'm not English. I came over from Cornwall about 12 years ago. I've been active in the, shall we say, earth spirituality field for over 20 years now. I love it here in Ireland. When I came here, I was a sick man. I'd driven myself far too hard in doing many things. And I came here and I found healing and love and a home and friendship. And I figure that I owe Ireland a debt. And that's why I'm doing the things that I'm doing now. It's a debt of honour. I'm trying to repay back, give back something for what I was given here. The energy has to flow both ways in any circuit for it to be complete. If it's all one way, it's just a drain on the battery. The energy has to flow both ways. So I'm trying to heal the land where it's been damaged, as I was healed by the land here. That's why I'm doing what I'm doing. It's an obligation that's on me. I mean, the knowledge that I have isn't there just for me to sit on and say, "Hey, hey, hey, this is all mine and you're not knowing about it," and just keeping it to myself. There's no use there. It has to be used. It has to be put to use. That's the responsibility that I have of possessing the knowledge. It's a privilege. It's also a responsibility as well. And I have to pay my debts. I have to walk my talk. I have to live in the truth. That's what's on the blade of my sword in Ogham. The truth against the world. It's the opening statement of a druid's judgment in a Brehon law court. Because a druid would have to uphold the truth against anybody or anything or the world if necessary. So, the truth against the world. I've bound myself to the truth. I can't walk outside it, because if my word is worth nothing, then neither am I. My word is my bond. That is a serious tree too, isn't it? Look at the size of that. Wow. Beautiful tree. You don't get many beeches that size. That is big. That is lovely. Oh, you could sit down by a tree like that all day and it would be slowly telling you things. I mean, that's one way that the tree of life was used by the druids. It's not the Kabbalistic tree, but the Celtic tree of life, the Ogham. There's a lot of the old druids' tree lore that's coded into the Ogham. The sacred tree circle was used for many purposes in many forms, and one of the primary means of using the tree circle is as a memory storage device, because a druid had to memorize everything and his training took 20 years in the old days, and they would use the sacred tree circle to store their knowledge so that they could retrieve it after a day's learning. They would go into a meditation state and visualise all the trees in a circle. And each day's learning could be based on a particular tree, because they're associated with different deities, birds, animals, herbs, times of year, seasons, tools, everything like this. So whatever learning you had could be tracked back to a tree. So you would go into a meditation state, visualise your sacred trees, visualise yourself going into the sacred circle, going to the relevant tree, climbing up the trunk, and then you climb out onto a branch, and then you climb out onto a smaller branch, and then you hang your knowledge there. And you come back down the twig, and then the branch, and then the trunk, and leave the circle, so you know where to go to retrieve it. The ancient Greeks used to do the same thing with a temple of the gods, a circular temple with all the gods and the goddesses and their altars all the way around it. And they'd take the knowledge in at the end of a day's learning and lay it on the altar of the relevant god, yeah, so that they could retrieve it when they wanted it again. We've forgotten how to train our memories. It's all down on computer disk and books these days. That's one reason why the Druids didn't never write anything down, because they wanted to make sure that their knowledge was transmitted in the old way from mouth to ear, because then you could be sure that it was only the right people with the right training that had the knowledge, because it could be dangerous in the wrong hands. If you wrote it down in a book, anybody could read it, and God only knows what they do with it then.
Timber being cut. Can you tell me what this is for, Michael?
Well, it's firewood now. Yeah, for cooking and keep the people warm. A bit more.
Unfortunately, or fortunately, as some people might look at it, I have a day job 5 days a week, and that means I can't be down here all the time. I'd love nothing more than to pack it all in, but I'm unfortunately tied, and these are the obligations of my life at the moment. But I come down here for weekends, and I come down here to work. But I come down every weekend and I bring whatever I can down with me, and I do my work. I helped build this roundhouse. I built the bridge over. I've built 2 tree houses here. I'm down here collecting acorns today for Glenstall Abbey, who are making a forest of endangered Irish woods. They've got acorns from Santry Woods and Ballyseedy in Kerry, all very valuable parts of Irish landscape that are under threat by progress. And so I'm just collecting... I'm collecting here now for the Glen of the Downs. We've got 120 acorns here.
Can I ask you about your day job?
Yeah, sure. I'm a musician. I have a small recording studio up in Dublin, and I'm writing an album. I received from the government last year a business expansion scheme. I don't know why I bothered sometimes, but anyway. I have a small recording studio, and I'm writing music, and I'm also a teacher in Ballyfermot College, where I teach sound recording. And but that's just the stuff that I have to do to earn money. Where I'm actually happiest is down here. You know, this is where I actually excel and actually have some joy in my life. I mean, so many people now are preoccupied with the whole idea of financial gain in life, but I mean, for me, I mean, what good is financial gain if you can't actually express yourself? And this is a place that I can express myself. Horse now here. This is a horse. He's a dog of the camp. He loves having sticks thrown for him. But I mean, you know, it's that. It's a quality of life as opposed to quantity of life, you know. And I personally find my release and my own, you know, I just leave this place on a Sunday evening feeling happy, you know. Come down here on a Saturday morning feeling stressed. And, you know, that in itself is enough for me to be able to highly recommend it as something to, you know, to do my time. So many other people find their weekends as a place for wanting to stay in bed and rest because they hate their day job so much. But I use my day job as a method of actually getting down here and where I want to be and enjoy myself. I suppose other people go hang gliding or rock climbing. And this is where I am. And I'm also, you know, it also allows me to... intellectually think through my whole environmental political opinion as well.
you become aware of many, 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 many different things because you've gained an objective perspective on life. Because it's not quite so subjective in the sense of scraping a living, of getting by, of, you know, of caught in a monetary system. Because there is no real money here. There's no currency except goodwill or karma, if you want, if kind of put a hippie perspective on it all. But I guess the spirituality of it is based on, like, again, from nature, of respect, of giving, of a belief in God and a belief in good, and a belief in the trees being a kind of a perfect symbol of, you know, they are in many ways a focal point of so many, 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 many issues. A tree is pure, a tree is perfection, a tree is untainted by human ignorance, you know what I mean, and human ugliness and human greed, and it's something which is beyond, you know, it elevates itself beyond our, you know, our petite little worlds, and it just it's in a state of zen. It just is.
For somebody who may be not familiar with a community like this, can you just tell me how the community operates, how people get on with each other, how you deal with problems and all the rest of it?
Obviously problems arise and personalities have a lot to play in it. We've no leaders. The media will say, oh, this person represents this or this. You know, we certainly have media spokespeople, but each individual makes their own protests and makes, you know what I mean? We are a community of people united on a common cause, which is the betterment of all our people. And I really have to say this, but I think they are people with vision. I think they are people who see a bit further down the line than their own noses. I think they're people who, people out there in the world, have to really realise that we're not here for ourselves. There's nothing here for us. When people will leave this site, many of them will be homeless. Many of them will just go back to a world on the dole. This might be the first chance that people will actually get a chance to really make a stand and really say, what is the purpose of my life if it is not lived without purpose? If there is no purpose. This is such a powerful message. And for people like myself, from an ordinary background, from an ordinary working class background, to actually go out and do something, it's still quite strange in Ireland, but you know what I mean? It's not strange at all when you think that we're the ones which are most affected. We're the people who fucking pay the price for it. I think we are nature freaks. There's no doubt about that. I spend, you know, 95% of the last, you know, of my adult life in the woods. I don't really go into cities. I've never found them appealing. I'm a country boy. Like the thing is that we are common sense people. We are just trying in some way, the only voice that we know how, to make our message known, to say that, yeah, we live in a democratic state and we do live in a free world, but where's my voice in all of this? If I arrived at Bertie O'Hearn's door, I'm a poor man, I've nothing in this world, I've nothing. If I arrived at Bertie O'Hearn's door and I asked him and told him what I thought, what's that worth? I wouldn't be in that position to ever be listened to. This is my way, this is my own way in my own life of making my own stand.
I'll not stand by and watch you flinch, little children of the gale. I've walked the wild Donegal hills and heard the banshee wail. I've skipped stones of the burren. I've wept in Cavan town. And surely as God gives me voice, not see one tree cut down. I'll not stand by and see you bleed, little children of the storm. I've spent sad hours with dairymen, by Fintown fires kept warm. I've walked the shore of Swilly, braved hard Atlantic gale, and surely as God gives me strength, in this great land I'll live at length, not see one tree to fall.
have it made me change, but I was born a big strong woman, and you just can't take these hills away without me fighting. This soul has been worked by many people, some died young and some still living. If you think you can take these hills, I'm not here to give them, give them, give them. I have walked through these hills since I was a mother's daughter, and you just can't take these hills away without me fighting. You may drive your big machines, but I was born a big strong woman, and you just can't take these hills away without me fighting. This soul has been walked by many people, some died young and some still living. If you think you're wrong, take these trees. I'm not here to give them, give them, give them. You're such a bright soul.
Interesting story, really, the glen. It was owned by a family called the Latouche family, who were very large landowners. They would have been of Huguenot extraction, people who came over here from France, and they owned the vast majority of this area of land. And back in the 1700s, they actually landscaped the Glen of the Downs. They cut a large swathe of trees from the top of the hill, and they built what is now the Glenview Hotel. That was actually a small cottage that they built in sort of a peasant style, and they used to bring their gentry along and they would come and sit and take a look at the view. But this was all part of a movement called the Picturesque Movement of 1700s, and there was an Irish gentleman called John Shanahan, I think his name was, who was a well-respected landscape gardener of the time. I think he did Powers Court, and he came and he planted a lot of the more exotic trees around here, some of the yews and the beech trees on the western side, some of the eucalyptus, and there's some very interesting exotic trees. And he also put the original road through in the manner that it was, very much in a serpentine way, so that you could actually, you could never see the full length of the glen. The glen was to be sort of a mysterious place. But then the glen is it's got a long history. The Latouche family went bust, and the land then was passed over to the Powers Courts, who shared it with another family. They extended the Glenview, and I think the Octagon, which was another site built on the eastern side at the top of the hill, was another sort of platform for viewing the beauty of the place. So there's a long, long history of the Glen as an actual, you know, a landscaped garden. And I suppose if you equated it with some of the Georgian houses of Dublin, you know, it's up there as a relic of that period of Irish history. You know, so I think even at that level, it must be seen as being a very, very important place. They used to run day trips from Dublin here right up until the 40s. You could catch a train down to Bray, and then cars and buses would drive people up to the Glenview, where they'd have tea and they'd sit outside and take a look just at the beauty of the place. So there's a huge history, and I mean, even now that's being carried through. I mean, here we are on a Sunday, cold January or end of December Sunday, and large numbers of families coming down here enjoying themselves. Really, you know, I mean, the Glen will always, I think, hopefully, if they leave it alone and don't put a road through it, it'll always be a place for people to come and get away from, you know, from the hectic life of Dublin.
From here, there's an oak tree just outside, covered in ivy, and then there's the new roundhouse that's just gone up. It's a bit of a communal meeting place, and it's also going to be an information centre for people. And the new kitchen that's just gone up. It's the one with the green roof on it. And We've got the river down below there. It's quite relaxing in the evenings. Occasionally the traffic dies down, you can hear it bubbling away there. But it's a very old wood. That oak tree there, it's a sessile oak. And I believe they're very unique, the oaks down here, because they've never been cross-pollinated with any other type of oak. So it's very unusual, that. And it's kind of a precious sort of item, and we've got to look after it.
One thing I've noticed since I've been here is this noise all the time in the background.
Sorry, noise? What road?
Can you tell me about different times of day? I mean, if you're up here at night time, just tell me how the noise changes.
It doesn't. It's just going constantly. We may get about 20 minutes, maybe 15 minutes every hour or so, where it's quiet, absolutely nothing. Generally Saturday night, after midnight sometime, it tends to start dying down, and then early hours it starts getting very quiet. But the rest of the week it's just constant. It's a nightmare. The faster these cars go, the more noise they make. And so if they're going to make the road wider, it goes faster, you're going to get even more noise. Can't win.